Chapter 6 Planet Coyote, Day 97 of the Midrim Retreat. Swaths of green and brown and yellow raced past the open bay doors of Namir's dropship. The roar of the wind and the fury of the engine combined into an inexorable howl that overwhelmed any other sound. So long as Namir fixed his gaze ahead, he seemed alone inside a hurricane. A hand tapped his shoulder. He turned to see Brand hold up two fingers. Behind Brand stood Gadrin, while Roach clung to one of the handrails, swaying with the rocking of the ship. In the recesses of the bay, two more squads of Twilight soldiers were crammed together on narrow benches, checking their blasters and their armor. 2 minutes until drop. Namir nodded to Brand and turned back to the doors. The streaks of color were slowing with the dropship, resolving into masses of broad-leafed trees, spotted and drooping with disease. A heavy vegetal aroma filled the humid air, along with something acrid Namir couldn't place. It wasn't the worst-smelling planet Namir had been to, but he guessed it would grow distasteful fast. He cinched the strap of his rifle and adjusted his helmet. The masses of jungle now became individual trees as the dropship descended toward the ground. 1 minute to go. A faint, tinny voice sounded as Brand yelled in his ear.
TIE fighter incoming! Do it fast!
Namir nodded again. The ship descended farther until tree limbs and wet leaves slapped its underside. One branch leapt in through the bay doors before snapping off and falling away. Then the foliage cleared, and Namir could see the tarry mire that served as Coyote's surface. With a fierce smile, he jumped. The fall was less than 5 meters, short enough to survive or high enough to kill, depending on how one landed. Namir could feel the heat of the dropship engines as he went down, but it was gone a second later when his feet struck the ground. He bent his knees as the dark soil compressed and his boots sank. Then he fell forward and tried to roll. In another moment, he was up again, filthy and sore, but unharmed. He surveyed the clearing. Brand was up already, as covered in mire as Namir. Gadrin was rising with a groan a stone's throw away. Roach was on her back, and a jolt of concern ran through Namir before she sprang up, panting and grinning.
Don't look so pleased with yourself, Namir called. You ever try a rocket-assisted landing, you'll break your ankle.
Assuming,
Gadrin added,
we keep you around after Chama recovers.
Assuming you're alive, Namir thought, though he caught himself before saying it aloud. Better not to demoralize the fresh meat. In the distance, in the direction the dropship had flown, Namir thought he heard the sound of laser fire. He winced inwardly. If the dropship went down, it would take the squad still aboard with it. There wasn't anything he could do now. He pulled out a data pad and checked his coordinates before waving the squad together. Come on, he said. We're 5 clicks from our target. In this jungle, it'll be a long walk. According to Howell's briefing, Coyote was one of the Empire's military research outposts. A planet so rich in plant and animal life that it served as the perfect testing and development ground for biological weapons. On Coyote, the Empire regularly deployed everything from neurotoxins to defoliants, manufacturing the most virulent poisons on site for shipment across the galaxy, and leaving Coyote itself a rotting morass of half-dead trees and composting debris. Yet the Empire hadn't gone unopposed. Native to Coyote was an intelligent species that resisted occupation and had proved too hardy to wipe out. The same biodiversity that made the planet useful as a laboratory also shielded the Coyote people from the Empire's custom plagues. What they weren't naturally immune or resistant to, they were able to cure, and every attempt on their lives made the Coyote angrier. If they'd been more populous or technologically adept, they might have reclaimed their world. As it was, they'd spent the past decade forcing the Empire to expend resources in an endless little war at the edge of the Mid-Rim. Without any formal negotiation, the Coyurti had become de facto allies of the Rebel Alliance. Only now the Coyurti really were on the verge of annihilation. 3 weeks earlier, High Command had received a garbled message stating that the onset of the Coyurti reproductive season had begun, a time during which, thanks to their peculiar biology, they would be effectively defenseless for a full phase of the planet's moon. By order of the Rebel Alliance, Twilight Company was there to engage enemy forces and protect the Coyurti people until the Coyurti could once again protect themselves. It was a mission that had induced snickering among the Twilight regulars. Namir had offered his own share of crude comments. But in securing Coyurti, Twilight Company would harden the invisible border between the Empire's holdings in the Mid-Rim and the galaxy's uncontrolled outer reaches. If Twilight could focus the battle on Coyurti, force the Empire to keep spending resources there, it could provide cover for the Rebellion's other retreating forces. It was, fate's willing, the last rearguard action of the Mid-Rim retreat. That was the official word. The truth was more complicated, and Namir suspected he knew only part of it. But his job wasn't to win the Rebellion's war or to understand the Coyurti. His job was to get Twilight through its latest operation intact. That would be challenge enough. Gadra nearly died in the first minute of the first battle. He would have died, should have, if not for a fluke. He'd charged into the Imperial camp, gripping his blaster cannon and shooting wildly while he tossed aside stormtroopers with his two free arms. He'd been entirely oblivious to the grenade that landed at his feet until it had been too late to take shelter. Inexplicably, the grenade hadn't detonated. Whether by dint of a manufacturer's flaw, the corrosive effects of Coyurti's atmosphere, or incompetence on the part of the Grenadier, Gadrin's life was saved despite his own best efforts. After that, the attack went more smoothly. Namir's squad had coordinated its assault plan with Sergeant Zab's team before the drop. The target was an assortment of tents and perimeter sensors run by a skeleton crew, a newly erected scout post servicing the Empire's fresh assault on the Coyurti people, totally unprepared for an attack from fed, rested, and heavily armed rebel forces. The two squads approached from opposite directions and made no effort at subtlety. Surprise, not stealth, was the day's watchword. Namir stayed close to Roach, taking shelter with her behind a fallen tree as they supplied covering fire. The girl was sweating, spending half her time diligently but fruitlessly lining up shots and the other half blasting randomly. Namir doubted she would hit anyone. That was fine with him, so long as she followed his lead. Brand had announced her intent to ambush any Imperials looking to flee or outflank their attackers on speeder bikes. Namir hadn't seen her since she'd slipped off into the jungle, and he counted that as a good sign. Gadrin and two of Zab's men pushed into the center of the camp, ensuring the Imperials couldn't pull together to mount a defense. Their job was the riskiest, and Namir might have joined them if Charma had been present to work with Roach. Instead, he scanned the battlefield and tried to keep the stormtroopers' attention on him instead of on the soldiers coming for their heads. The shooting was over within 10 minutes. When each squad member signaled an all clear, the teams converged carefully into the camp itself and began rigging what little equipment was present for detonation. The acrid scent in the air was almost painful. Roach asked Namir about it, and he shrugged. Blaster bolts rip up the atmosphere. Every time you fire, something gets vaporized. Every planet stinks a little different. Roach nodded with a swift, jerky motion. She was sweating more than she had been while fighting. After another 5 minutes, both squads were marching back into the jungle. Zab had wanted to steal the speeders, but Namir had talked him out of it. They'd be rigged with homing beacons, and no one on either team had the expertise to remove the trackers fast enough. Speed was imperative. There would be TIE bombers over the camp in moments, set to annihilate any straggling rebel forces. That was how the war on Coyurti began. On the second day of the Coyote campaign, Namir and his squad mates spent the morning waist-deep in a stagnant bog. With improvised camouflage spackled on their heads and shoulders, they waited for an Imperial convoy to pass by. Namir had to warn Roach to secure her rifle when she started aiming at imaginary noises. She'd been twitchy ever since the first day's firefight, and boredom didn't seem to sit well with her. 5 hours in, a message from Lieutenant Saragon came through, announcing that the convoy had changed course at dawn. Namir cursed loudly enough to send Marsh Lizard scampering. He was cold, and his thighs were cramped, and he doubted he'd ever clean off all of the muck. But in truth, he didn't mind the change of plans. The boredom was over, and the squad could move on. That afternoon, Brand and Namir refilled their canteens from a murky creek, while Gadrin and Roach kept watch. Sterilization pills could make the water safe to drink, but only after the canteens filtered out any solids. Namir stared at the container in his hand, waiting for it to click into readiness. "Remind you of anything?" Brand asked. "Cor Levan," Namir said. "I remember. I thought you'd get us all killed. I remember that, too." Bran held a fist level with her eyes and watched a four-winged insect crawl across her knuckles. "You were a brat back then," she said. "Kid from a galactic backwater who thought he'd been fighting longer than all of us put together." Namir bit back a smile. "And I had been." Bran shrugged. "Sure, but who would have believed it?" The canteen clicked softly. Namir laughed, shook the mud from the filter, and clipped the container to his belt. In the evening, green and orange glows lit the northern horizon. A dozen Twilight squads were attacking an Imperial fort, Namir knew. It had been part of the plan from the outset, the first large-scale engagement of the campaign. From 30 clicks away, all Namir could do was check for signals and watch the colors wash over the jungle canopy. As evening became night, the colors grew more intense and black dots, ash or TIE fighters, Namir couldn't tell which, speckled the sky. Occasionally an echo like distant thunder passed among the trees. Gadrin kept Roach occupied, first walking her through the steps to check her gear and clean the moisture from her rifle. Later they laid out a dozen different ration packs, organizing them by flavor, as labeled, and actual flavor, as determined by experience. When they handed Namir a compact nutrient bar that tasted like chemically infused mucilage, he didn't argue and ate in silence. Namir kept watching even after the more colorful blooms faded and were replaced by a guttering orange. When Roach and Gadrin had zipped themselves into their bedrolls and the chittering of the night's insects had begun, Brand paused nearby before beginning her patrol. "Tomorrow?" she asked. "Could be," Namir said. "Might be another day." Brand tilted her head as if listening to something far off. Her expression was untroubled, however. "You think they did it?" Namir asked. "Fort's trashed," Brand said. She sounded certain. "Don't know the cost, though. Carver is good, but you know how he gets." Namir nodded. Brand started to turn away before Namir asked abruptly, "You really don't wish you were with them?" Brand shook her head. "I'm here for a reason," she said. "That's good enough for me." Namir turned back to the fire in the north. "Get some sleep," Brand said. On the third morning of the Coyote campaign, Namir checked the portable satellite uplink for coded updates from the front. He received only a set of coordinates and a four-word message that decrypted read, ATST, seek and destroy. Gadrin took inventory of the squad's weaponry while Roach and Namir packed up camp and Brand kept watch.
"Three grenades," Gadrin told Namir afterward. "Together they might take down a walker."
"Not a lot of room for error," Namir said. Gadrin nodded grimly.
"I agree. So we use the detonators. One should suffice. And we would still have enough for..."
"No," Namir said. Those are spoken for. We'll find a way. Their target had left a trail of snapped logs and burnt trees, and shortly before noon, they caught up with it. A two-legged, box-headed, all-terrain scout transport that marched through the jungle, turning mounted blaster cannons to whatever obstacle stood in its path. The squad's first engagement was a disaster. Gadrin threw his grenade too hard against the vehicle's shell and sent it bouncing away. Roach was nearly crushed by a tree, whose lower trunk was nearly turned to cinders by the walker's cannons. Brand tried to climb to the walker's cockpit and sprained her ankle when she fell. The afternoon became a series of hit-and-run engagements. The squad kept the machine's pilots from resuming their mission, forcing them to hunt. Gadrin scorched the walker's metal sides with repeated shots. Roach managed to lob a grenade close enough to its spindly legs to visibly damage its mechanisms. But the machine kept walking and incinerating trees. If the jungle hadn't been so humid, it all would have burned. By evening, Namir had developed a new plan. The squad continued to strike and retreat to keep the machine in pursuit. Along the path of their withdrawal, the ground gradually turned from mud to water. It took hours of maneuvering, but by nightfall, all four squad members were soaking wet, and the walker was lying at the bottom of a marsh, its pilots sealed in the flooded, airless cockpit. Namir ached from a day on the run, and at camp he stripped down to his underclothes to try to dry off. Brand was nursing her ankle, applying a non-regulation goo she swore by. Roach was trying to set up a heater to take the edge off the water's chill, pretending not to stare at the brands between Namir's shoulders or the tattoos on his legs. Gadrin was standing at the edge of the camp, gazing out into the jungle. Namir slapped Gadrin hard between his shoulders. "Good day. I think we won." Gadrin raised a hand to hush him.
"Listen."
At first, Namir heard nothing but a faint breeze and the chirping of insects. Yet gradually, he discerned a low thrumming in the distance. It was neither a drumbeat nor a hum, but something in between, unmistakably alive, with the resonance of 100 deep voices. Once Namir understood the thrumming, he began to hear other noises too. High-pitched peals like bells or notes of birdsong, clicks like wood tapping wood.
"It is the coyote,"
Gadrin said. Roach and Brand joined them, and both stared toward the distant sound, the singing or chanting or whatever it truly was. Namir looked between his companions and saw them transfixed, but he suddenly felt cold, and he smelled his sweat and the filth of the water in his hair.
"Now,"
Gadrin said,
"it is a good day. We have served this world. Cherish the memory and let it warm you in the face of true evil."
Namir turned his back on the others and settled into his bedroll by the heater. "Don't amuse yourselves for too long," he called. "Tomorrow will be rough." On the fourth day of the Coyote campaign, the order Namir had been awaiting came at last. He marched the squad out from the bogs and into the highland jungle, where the rotting trees took on the sickly hue of pus. Gadrin took charge of navigation, leading them through dark, narrow valleys that wound among the hills. Now and again he stopped to examine a tree that was still whole and vital, running his enormous fingers over bark dusted in vermilion pollen, as if he'd found the gemstone in the planet's dross. Three times Namir nearly scolded him for stopping, but Gadrin never delayed for long. They paused to eat at sunset, though Namir warned the others that the rest would be brief. Brand was limping slightly. Roach was soaked in sweat. Namir kept his attention on Gadrin. "How far?" he asked.
"Assuming we haven't been lied to?"
Gadrin asked. "Assuming nothing," Namir said. "I want to know when we'll reach the coordinates. I'm not asking what's there." Gadrin smiled, showing teeth that could sever a human neck.
"If we march through the night, we'll arrive by morning,"
according to the maps. We march until midnight, Namir said. If we're half dead when we arrive, we won't have much of a chance.
Assuming we've been lied to.
Namir smirked. If we've been lied to, we're dead either way. It wasn't until long after full dark that Namir realized Brand had been listening to the conversation. She matched Namir's pace despite her limp and said softly, If it's a trap, I'll kill her. Namir looked to Brand. He couldn't make out her expression in the dark. He wanted to ask, What makes you so sure you'll survive? But he'd fought with Brand long enough to know the answer. He'd spent enough hours with Brand to know what it meant for her to say such a thing. Instead, he said, You don't want to promise that. I do. Brand said, I swear, if Ivari Chalice lied, I'll avenge you. On the fifth day of the Coyurdi campaign, Namir and his squad crested a stony rise covered in thick red ferns and came into view of what Ivari Chalice had lovingly called the distillery. Three white bunkers connected by narrow passages sat in a triangle below the rise, smokestacks rising from each to deposit a fine mist into the humid air. Vegetation covered the bunkers' rooftops, occluding them from any satellite that penetrated the shroud of fog. Three patrols of stormtroopers moved about the structures, staying close to the walls. Either they weren't concerned about maintaining a wide perimeter, or they'd already drawn back in preparation for a fight. Howl had briefed Namir on the compound the day before planetfall. Governor Chalice, he'd said, had described the distillery as the main processing facility for Coyurdi's bioweapons. Inside, chemicals and toxins were refined and combined before being shipped on to spaceports for distribution off-world. Chalice had promised that the destruction of the distillery would set Coyurdi's operations back years. And thus, while the rest of Twilight Company, including 12 recruits from Hydoral who'd been barely cleared for combat and who would hinder their comrades as much as their foes, fought to preserve a desperate species, Namir and his squad were to risk their lives on the word of a traitor. The squad waited atop the rise throughout the morning, observing the patrol patterns and noting the handful of entrances to the bunkers. No one mentioned the possibility of a trap anymore. Namir guessed the possibility of a trap was the only thing on anyone's mind. Around midday, a lightly armored transport skimmer brushed over the jungle canopy and landed outside the compound's cargo entrance. Brand rose to a crouch from where she'd been lying flat in the shale. She disappeared down the rise without a word. Namir could barely tell she was still limping.
Should we get closer?
Roach asked. Her hands were trembling, but her voice was steady.
In case someone sees her.
Gadrin saved Namir the trouble of responding.
If someone spots her, we all die. Give her room to work.
Namir pulled out a pair of macro binoculars and tried to follow Brand's movements. Even the display's smart tracking only caught an occasional flicker between trees. He saw no sign that the stormtroopers had been alerted. They were busy carting brightly painted yellow and red and blue barrels from the skimmer to the compound, with only two on active watch. The next time Namir spotted Brand, the stormtroopers were nearly finished unloading the cargo, and Brand was halfway back up the rise. She climbed the steep slope rapidly, but without, so far as Namir could discern, any special urgency.
Done,
she announced, as she crested the top and crouched among the ferns again.
Set the timer for 30 minutes. Enough time to get down there. Not so much that they'll find the device.
Will it be enough? Which did you choose?
Brand stared at Gadrin as if he were speaking nonsense.
A blue one, she said. It was closest.
Gadrin grunted.
Then we must hope the blue one is deadly enough for our needs. But not so deadly, it kills us too.
Next open recruit,
Namir said, watching the stormtroopers lock and seal the compound's cargo entrance.
I'm bringing a medtech into the squad, and I'm not sharing with the rest of you.
30 minutes later, somewhere in the distillery, a micro-detonator attached to the underside of a blue barrel exploded. Namir didn't see it happen, and the blast was far too small to be heard outside the bunker walls. But he knew the device had triggered when sirens began wailing from the compound and all its doors slid open simultaneously. He knew the plan was working when a stream of lab workers and security personnel hurried outside, looking more irritated than terrified, and lining up with the rote certainty of people who drilled for disaster 100 times before. The squad descended the rise, circling away from the workers' gathering spot. Namir indicated one of the back entrances to the compound, now open and guarded by a single stormtrooper. The guard didn't make a sound when Brand slipped her knife inside the joint between his helmet and chest piece. Inside, thick white fog sprayed from ventilators. "Neutralizer gas," Brand said. "Seen it before. Puts out chemical fires, liquefies toxic gases for cleanup. Mostly safe. Try not to get a lungful." Gadra nodded. Namir glanced at Roach, but she didn't seem to be listening. She was staring into the corridor ahead, her mouth open and teeth chattering. If there was a trap, Namir thought, this was the last chance for Chalice's allies to spring it. But it was far too late to turn back. The 4 squad members worked their way through the compound as carefully as they could while knowing the workers might return at any time. They swiftly developed a system. In each room, packed with laboratory equipment or thrumming vats, Gadrin and Brand set explosives while Namir and Roach watched for reinforcements. When each room was rigged, they moved together to the next. Brand kept her mask in place, but no one bothered wearing the hazard gloves or rebreathers Quartermaster Hober had provided before planetfall. If the distillery's toxins were loosed, half measures wouldn't do much good. Midway through the second bunker, Namir and Roach entered a stockroom together. The neutralizer gas was too thick for visibility, but a cry of alarm made it obvious the room was occupied. Before Namir could locate the source, Roach turned and fired. 5 shots, one sending a vague silhouette crumbling to the floor and the other sparking against a containment tank. Namir pressed himself against the wall, listened for footsteps, and hurried to confirm Roach's kill when he heard nothing more. On the floor was a middle-aged human man dressed in a laborer's uniform. The gas had already extinguished the fire wrought by Roach's blaster, leaving 2 charred holes in his torso. He carried no weapon, no vial of toxins ready to be tossed at an intruder. He was an Imperial, however, and he was dead. "We're clear," Namir called out. "Keep working." Namir didn't stop Roach from approaching the body herself. She didn't kneel to inspect her work. She bounced slightly on her knees a meter away, twisting her hands around her rifle, as if she were trying to strangle it, staring at the man's face. Namir gave her a few moments and then snapped, "Stay on watch. We're not done yet." Roach didn't move. Brand was watching her. Namir started to march toward her, but Brand was at her side faster, touching her shoulder to guide her away. The squad was 0.5 kilometer out when the compound blew with the sound of a thunderclap. Brand had sworn they were being followed, but Namir gave his team a moment to turn and watch dark smoke rise into the sky. Anyone in pursuit would pause too. Then together, they pressed on into the uplands. Only Gadrin seemed uplifted by their triumph. The others kept their heads low and said nothing, as if they'd proven themselves fools caught in Governor Chalice's trap. There hadn't been any trap. They might have just saved countless soldiers from bleeding out their ears or watching their skin drop off their bones or whatever Imperial bioweapons were primed for. So why, Namir wondered, did they all feel like they'd been beaten? The climb took them above the jungle canopy onto an escalating series of rocky plateaus covered in thinner vegetation. Their orders were to rendezvous in the evening with a dropship that would return them to either the front lines or the Thunderstrike, depending on the campaign's progress. Namir found himself hoping for the latter as he fought off a headache to messing behind his eyes. Maybe the humidity was getting to him, he thought, or maybe the change in altitude had come too quickly. Twice, Namir caught Roach lagging behind, bouncing on her knees to an inaudible beat, hands clenching her rifle. The first time, he lost his temper.
"You stay with your team!"
he yelled, after a lengthy series of obscenities.
"I don't care if you're picking flowers or having a cry over some dead man. You keep up until your souls are bleeding, and then you crawl. Understood?"
Roach nodded jerkily and rejoined the line. The second time she fell behind, Namir felt ire rise in his gut again. More powerful than before, but he didn't have the strength to scream. Instead, he waved the group to a rest. "Let them catch us," he thought, as he sipped from his canteen. "Can't get any worse." Then he looked at his companions. Bran's forehead glistened with sweat, and she was breathing heavily. Her nostrils flared with every breath. She sat on the ground, legs outstretched, adjusting her boot on an injured ankle. Roach hadn't bothered sitting. She just wrapped her arms around her chest, her head down as she shivered. Gadrin stood straight as ever, keeping watch. Namir spit out a curse, tore off his helmet, rolled up his sleeves, and began inspecting his skin. He searched for a rash, a blister, any fresh blemish. He found nothing, and pounded his palms against the ground in frustration. The others were watching him now. He slowed his breathing, tried to calm himself. "How bad do we look?" he asked Gadrin, voice low and steady. Gadrin lowered his head and didn't answer. "Does anyone know what happened?" he asked. "Did we breathe something? Were we sprayed with biotoxins and I just didn't notice?" Roach didn't look up. Brand sounded bitter as she said, "Doesn't take much to have an effect. We might have cracked a container somewhere." "Or maybe," Namir thought, "you shouldn't have picked the blue barrel." But he loathed himself for the idea, even as it sprang to his mind. Brand wasn't at fault.
"Whatever it was,"
Gadrin said,
"I seem to be immune."
"Maybe," Brand said. "Might just affect you slower."
"Also possible."
Namir squeezed his eyes shut and cinched the strap of his rifle, tried to evaluate his aches and the pain in his skull.
Okay. Anyone feel like they're about to die? Anyone not able to walk another hour or two?"
No one spoke up.
"Then we keep moving," he said. "Not much we can do here. So hold your guts in until we get to a medic."
When they finally reached the rendezvous point, there was no dropship waiting. Namir didn't have a backup plan. If the dropship didn't arrive, they were all dead. Even Gadrin, who still showed no signs of illness. Even Brand, who could live through anything. Namir didn't tell his squad that. In the morning, as they picked at rations that none of them had the appetite for, he told them they'd wait for the dropship as long as they could. There would be no attempts at communication. If they tried to send a message through the satellite uplink, odds were the Imperials would detect the signal. Besides, he didn't expect their transport had forgotten about the pickup. If the dropship could come, it would come. In a worst-case scenario, Namir explained, they would hike toward the front lines and hope to reunite with the rest of Twilight Company. He didn't tell the group that such an attempt would be suicide, and he had no intention of trying it. He didn't think anyone believed him anyway. Roach had turned pale overnight, her clammy skin now glistening with moisture. Brand kept her dignity better, but Namir caught her slipping away from camp to vomit in the underbrush. Namir's headache came and went, which was a small mercy. During its worst periods, he saw colorful spots and was overwhelmed by vertigo. After breakfast came the busy work. Patrols, equipment checks, scouting for food and water, planning escape routes from the camp, listening to static for unencrypted Imperial comm chatter, listening to static for unencrypted Rebel comm chatter, listening to static for unencrypted Coyote comm chatter. Equipment maintenance, camouflage touch-ups, wound inspections. Teaching Roach to use the uplink. Teaching Roach to disassemble and repair the uplink in case of emergency. Erasing patrol trails. Erasing trails left while erasing patrol trails. Namir kept his people occupied until nightfall. Then they huddled around the heater while Gadrin kept watch. None of them able to sleep. Roach had pulled her knees to her chest inside her bedroll, then drawn the bedroll's length around herself. She was still shivering. Namir found himself watching her, and when his skull didn't feel too tight around his brain to think, he realized how little she had said since the distillery. He wondered if she was thinking about her decision to leave Hadoral Prime or about the man she'd killed. But he had nothing to say to comfort her. He wasn't entirely sure he wanted to. He'd been through worse at Roach's age, and if she lived, she'd be better for it. She'd be a better soldier, a better part of Twilight Company. If she died, what did a few final hours of comfort matter?
Roach.
Bran's voice was thick, but it cut through the night air. She'd lodged herself against a rock, sitting straight even through her pain. Roach looked over at her, still silent.
You want to know how I joined Twilight Company?
Bran's words caught Namir by surprise. If he'd been less ill, he might have shown as much. Roach bit her lip and nodded. She looked like a frightened child, which Namir supposed she was.
I won't repeat myself,
Bran said, and you'll respect my privacy. It was a statement, not a question. Roach nodded again. Bran spat a wad of phlegm onto the ground and began.
I used to be a bounty hunter, she said. You know that. This is almost 20 years ago, not long after the Emperor took control. Not long after the Jedi died.
Roach shook her head, frowning in confusion. Namir had heard the word Jedi mentioned by rebels before. They seemed to be some kind of religious warriors from before the Empire. But that was all he knew. Roach seemed equally uninformed.
Forget it, Bran said. The point is, things were better then. Better than they are now. Better than they had been during the Clone Wars. People cared about the law. The Empire kept them safe. But the wars had done their damage. I worked Tanganing mostly. Infrastructure there was hit bad by the Separatists, and the Syndicate stepped in, extorting folks in return for food, transport, basics. Imperial military tried their best, but the gangs and blackmailer still ran things below the surface. So they kept people like me on retainer. Empire didn't like bounty hunters even then, but on Tanganine there were killers and smugglers to catch. I felt good about what I did.
Bran's head dipped forward, and for a short while, Namir was worried she'd passed out. Finally, though, she squared her shoulders, looked into the distance, and resumed speaking.
I don't know when things went wrong, but as Law came back to Tanganine, the Empire changed from what it was to whatever it is we've got now. I brought a man in for stealing power converters and saw him jailed for life. I tracked down a gang leader, a spice dealer, the lowest of the low, and saw him pardoned because he bribed a magistrate.
The words were simple and her tone was flat, as if she were describing horror she didn't want to relive. Namir saw Roach wanting to ask for more, for specifics, but she seemed to know better. Maybe she was afraid of what Bran would do if she pried. But the pain and nausea in Roach's face were gone. Bran didn't seem to notice the girl's unasked questions.
A few years back, she said, I decided I needed a break. We'd finished rooting out one of the last big syndicates, and I was getting sick of the blood. A lot of people wouldn't surrender, knowing what would happen in prison.
She trailed off, started again.
I needed a break. So for my next job,
I picked a target that would get me off Tanganine, out of the core worlds, away from cities and crime and bureaucrats.
Captain Yvonne?
Roach asked. Captain Yvonne, Brand said. I hadn't done much rebel hunting, but I figured it would keep me busy a while. A hint of a smile played across her lips. Tracking down Twilight Company took time, Brand said. But soldiers do stupid things when they're on leave. Talk to the wrong people.
That's a lesson for you,
Namir muttered in Roach's direction, though he wasn't sure she heard. And get cozy, mention their next assignments. Wasn't more than 4 months before I showed up at an open recruit on Veron and offered to join. I'll skip the blow-by-blow. Short version is I lied. I smuggled in my kit, and I waited for a clear shot at Howl and an opportunity to escape. By the time my chance came, I'd gotten to know the troops, so that maybe they had a point.
You changed your mind?
Roach asked. Brand shook her head almost imperceptibly, as if anything more would send her spinning into oblivion.
Not until I had a gun to Howl's head.
Man didn't seem scared, and we got to talking. He offered me a job, and I took it. Roach nodded, not quite meeting Brand's gaze.
No regrets,
Brand said.
Not about joining. Not about my old life, either.
Namir buried himself in his bedroll and tried not to laugh. Much later, in the dim light of pre-dawn, Namir relieved himself in a gulch near the camp and made his way back toward his colleagues. Halfway there, he found Brand seated on a boulder, cleaning her knife. He sat down beside her. For a while, Namir watched sunlight delineate the shadows. Finally, he said,
"How come you didn't tell her the whole thing?"
Brand shrugged.
"She's too young," she said.
"Besides, we'll all be dead in a few days. A few lies won't hurt her." Namir nodded and dug into the dirt with the toe of his boot. Then he managed to smile. "If we're all dead, who's going to get revenge on Chalice?" Brand shrugged again.
"Far as I see, her information was good. We maybe saved a lot of people from..."
She hesitated, then extended a hand and looked down at the palm. A rash was spreading up toward her wrist.
"This.
Not her fault we weren't careful enough." Namir's own rash had begun low on his neck. He'd discovered it while shaving.
"Hal doesn't know that," he said. "If we're lucky, Chalice will get blamed anyway. The troops could stone her to death."
Brand flipped her knife over and sheathed it.
"You've got a mean streak, Sergeant."
She wasn't smiling. It made Namir laugh.
"When we're dead, I'm going to miss these talks."
"Me too,"
Brand said. She still didn't smile, but when Namir reached out his hand, she took it and squeezed. 2 days later, the dropship arrived. Namir couldn't remember much of what happened afterward. He remembered Gadrin shouting and Brand firing her blaster into the sky to indicate the squad's position. He remembered trying to crawl out of his bedroll toward the dropship when the vessel landed and sent waves of dust and heat rippling his way. He remembered not quite making it. He was sure Gadrin had been the one to scoop him up and carry him the distance. He was reasonably certain he'd said unforgivable things to whoever tried to strap him into his seat. He'd found the strength to cinch himself into the harness and forced himself to stay conscious while being battered against the wall. Half dead or not, he refused to be the soldier who passed out during takeoff. That was Roach's duty as fresh meat. Aboard the Thunderstrike, he tried to report the destruction of the distillery to any medic who would listen, then realized that Gadrin was still alive and could do the job just as well. He suffered days of tests, which he was later assured had taken only hours, and he remembered being told that he'd been exposed to only minuscule amounts of unrefined, unweaponized biotoxin. The effects were easily treatable. Mimir and his team were going to be fine. The Coyurity campaign was over.
The Waka is staring us down. The X-Wings can't get low enough to hit the cannon. And then we start hearing this drumbeat.
Ajax smacked his palm against the dented metal tabletop, producing a hollow ring.
"Play your cards," Brand said.
Ajax ignored her.
"But it's not a drumbeat. It's a whole blasted army of Coyurity. We hadn't even seen the things before, but I figure that whole reproductive season thing must be over because they're swarming. 10 minutes later, the whole garrison is on fire, and the lieutenant is begging us to stop lobbing grenades. We won! We won! Save some for the next mission!"
Half the clubhouse laughed with Ajax while the other half scoffed. Gadrin playfully slapped Ajax between the shoulder blades.
"Maybe the Coyurity will invite you, their mighty savior, to the festivities next time."
His voice became more somber as he continued.
"May they continue their fight with skill and fortune."
"And without us!"
someone called. Namir didn't see who. He couldn't disagree with the sentiment, but he wouldn't have voiced it aloud in present company. Gadrin frowned, as did, to Namir's surprise, Brand.
"So long as we're done with the jungle," Namir said instead.
"I still smell it on all of you, and I swear there are gnats in the barracks now." There was a round of agreement, and the card game resumed. Namir kept half an eye on the game while he read through post-conflict reports and counted up the dead and wounded. The relatively few who'd fallen on the front lines, fighting with the bulk of Twilight, had been mourned already. No one would mention them while sober. Not for a while. The tally of the wounded was more severe. Namir dreaded the task of reassigning squad members to compensate. All 13 of the fresh meat assigned to the ground had survived. They'd acquitted themselves adequately, for the most part. Corbo, who brought the knife to Chalice's prison, had half a dozen confirmed kills. The bedraggled man Namir had pegged for a potential spy at the open recruit had taken a grazing blaster shot protecting a Coyurity native. Namir had seen only 2 reports of recruits freezing up entirely. Better than usual, really, and a hopeful sign that Twilight might rebuild its ranks in time for the next major offensive.
"So, Sergeant,"
Ajax called, after pushing a pile of credits over to Gadrin.
"Any news from Fisheye Company?"
Namir frowned. "What's Fisheye have to do with anything?" Fisheye was the Alliance's 68th Infantry, Aquatic Division. Twilight had crossed paths with the company once before, but Namir hadn't heard anything about it in months. Then again, he was still catching up on the day's rumors.
"Missed the big announcement and all the puking and hallucinating,"
Twitch said with a smirk in an almost incomprehensible mumble. Ajax laughed before explaining.
"Turns out Coyurity wasn't the only target this week. Rearguard actions across the board. The 21st was on Bastine. Bitter Pill Company was on some trash heap of a planet. Lost their troop transport but got a replacement."
"Then it was coordinated. One final effort to allow the fleet to complete its withdrawal from the Midrim."
Twitch was still muttering.
"Battleships aren't running fast enough. Toss your ground troops in the furnace. That'll fix them up."
The news of a coordinated action didn't surprise Namir. He hadn't expected it, but he should have. One company on one planet wouldn't ever be enough to distract the whole Imperial fleet. Still, something rankled him about the news, even if he couldn't say what. "I'll check with the captain about Fisheye," he said, and stood with a groan.
"I'm meeting with Howl in an hour, and I'm sure he'll be happy to share."
Namir's meeting was with Lieutenant Sargon, not Howl, but he bullied his way into the captain's office anyway to deliver his report on the fresh meat's progress. He kept it short, and Howl appeared attentive throughout. But then Hal treated everyone as if they were endless fountains of profundity, always worthy of patience and consideration, regardless of what idiocy they were spewing. It irritated Namir to no end.
And your team? Hal asked when Namir finished. You're feeling well again?
Good enough, Namir said. Wish we'd known what we were dying for, though. It wasn't what he intended to say. It wasn't even what bothered him, though it was close enough.
How do you mean?
Hal asked. Now he was committed. We're going to provide cover for our retreating fleet. We're going to save the Coyurity. We're going to test the governor's information at the distillery. Those are all nice, clear mission parameters, but they're not the same. Now we come home and learn the first explanation was the real one, only it's not. Not entirely. Because it turns out we're only one part of a larger operation. You know I'm not the one to question the grand strategy. I fight because Twilight fights. But I don't like to feel used either. Hal maintained that same tolerant look.
We can't have more than one reason for what we do.
Not if we want to win, Namir said. You pick a goal and your troops get it done. Hal started to reply, then raised a finger as if to silence himself. He squeezed his eyes shut, reopened them, and began again.
Our goal isn't conquest, but alchemy. The transmutation of the galaxy. We are a catalyst. Where rebellion comes into contact with empire, change must occur. The substance of oppression becomes the substance of freedom. And as with any such change, terrible energies are released. War, victory, and defeat. But the alchemist's concern isn't those energies. They're a byproduct, not the means of transmutation itself. The alchemist's concern is the purity of the catalyst. The rest will take care of itself. He shrugged then and smiled. Mostly, anyway. If we maintain the strength of our principles, the rest will follow. Your death on Coyurity wouldn't have halted the process. If all of Twilight Company had died, would the fleet have failed to escape? Would the Coyurity have been wiped out? Would we know any less about Governor Chalice's intent? The words meant nothing to Namir. He shook his head and grimaced. I want to give my people a mission they can count on. Not a philosophy of war. Something that keeps them focused.
Hal smiled.
I think you underestimate your people. But we've had this discussion.
They had. Beginning on Blacktar Cyst and recurring on and off since then. It never turned out satisfactory, but there were days that Hal's madness, his willingness to sacrifice Twilight to achieve his peculiar definition of victory, troubled Namir more profoundly than others. Late that night, Namir went searching for Roach. She hadn't been at the clubhouse. He hadn't seen her since they'd left Coyurity, though the medics assured him she was healthy. One of Sergeant Fectrin's men pointed Namir in the right direction, and he eventually found her in a cramped cargo bay, back pressed tight against the bulkhead and arms wrapped around her knees. She was shivering and rocking gently, and she stared bitterly at Namir when he walked inside. "You still sick?" he asked.
"No,"
Roach said. Namir picked his way around the clutter of crates and spare engine parts and put his own back to the wall beside Roach. He didn't join her on the floor. Roach glanced up, then back to her knees.
"It's just the fighting," she said. "It was my first fight. First time I killed someone."
"And you're all broken up about the guy you shot?"
"Yes,"
Roach said. Namir snorted.
"That's garbage."
Roach looked up again. Namir shook his head. "A lot of people get messed up when they shoot people," he said. "Not you, though. Later, maybe. Right now, you've got bigger issues." Roach kept staring. Namir slid down the bulkhead next to Roach and stretched his legs. He tapped his heel against the metal floor, listened to the barely resonant thud.
"How long have you been clean?"
he asked. Roach was watching his foot. He saw her expression twist as indecision came and went in her face before she finally whispered,
"Since Hedoro. Not much before."
"That why you were in a detention center?" Namir asked.
"Spice addiction."
Roach nodded.
"Basically."
Namir kept his tone casual. "I probably should have seen it then. You'd think I'd know the difference between sweaty and nervous and going through withdrawal by now." Again, the long silence. When Roach spoke, the words were stilted as she forced each to emerge.
"I'm clean now. I'm here to fight. I won't mess up."
"Yeah, you will," Namir said.
"That's okay, though.
We've all got problems." Roach smiled weakly. An uncertain smile, an obligatory smile at her commander's sad little joke. Namir reached over and took Roach's chin in his hand. Her skin was cool and damp. He turned her face toward his.
"We protect our own. You understand?"
She nodded. Namir let go. She didn't understand. Roach went on shivering. Her knuckles turned white where she gripped her knees, as if her hands were the only things holding the rest of her body together. As if she was afraid she might dissolve and spill onto the floor if she relaxed. Namir sat listening to the metallic groaning of the ship and the low, static roar of the engines before shifting closer to Roach and reaching an arm around her shoulders. He felt the damp of her shirt, smelled her sweat, heard her breath come rapidly like the respiration of a tiny, trapped animal. He gripped her loosely. Roach stiffened for a few moments before squeezing smaller and pressing into his side. They sat together in silence through the night.